The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Welcome back. The second half of the show live. We have a lot to do and a lot to deal with here in just only 2 hours. Greg McElroy joining us now to look ahead to some of the key games of the weekend. Greg, thank you for the time. What's good staying in your state in Alabama? Because almost everyone has said this is not going to be much of a game for Alabama. They said that last year too and were wrong, but I know I'm going to make you be creative here. If I said you have to give me a reason why A&M would win the game and what has to happen realistically, could you come up with one?
I don't know. This would be a situation where Alabama would kind of have to lose it more than A&M could potentially win it. Like, Alabama would have to make some mistakes. Right now, Paul, I'm just not really convinced that A&M's offense is going to be able to do enough to put strain on Alabama's defense over the course of 67. Exact same conversation last year. I came on this show, told you on a Monday, said, man, I don't think this game's going to be close. Didn't think it was. Based on how A&M was playing going into the game, they had stunk it up against Arkansas. They'd stunk it up against Colorado, and they hadn't blocked very well. They just hadn't really done a whole lot leading up to that game against Bama. Then sure enough, Jimbo pulls out all the right stops, created all the best matchups, and this quarterback played phenomenally well en route to a massive upset. So what I would say is that A&M's always capable because they have great personnel. And they have great players. The problem is these players are just really young, and the execution just has not been there at any point of the season. Now, this will be their Super Bowl, and I would be surprised if they didn't play their best game of the year, but I'd also be surprised if their offense can put up more than, say, 21 to 24 points against a defense that's been consistently good all season long, and the only time they really played poorly was really for about a quarter, at the end of the second quarter through midway through the third, three quarters of the way through the third, there last week. So this defense has been really good for Bama, and I would anticipate a difficult game for A&M's offense to try to find themselves in a game like this.
Listen, I don't know. Maybe you do what the real situation is with Bryce Young, but assuming he plays, what difficulties will he have? What kind of impediments will there be with this AC joint sprain?
Well, Paul, I can't speak to an AC joint sprain. I did, however, have an SC joint sprain, a little different, obviously. The SC joint, for those that are on radio, I'm pointing to it now, it's where the clavicle connects to the sternum. It's basically right below your Adam's apple, and you can kind of feel it right there. Mine popped forward, and I was actually able to play. It's the same injury that Quinn Ewers suffered against Alabama a couple weeks ago. I was able to play through it, though, because mine popped forward. And it's challenging, though. An AC joint is more towards the outside of your arm, where, you know, you're close to your rotator cuff in that vicinity. What I can speak to is the impact that it had on me being able to drive the football down the field and drive the football with great velocity. It's difficult to do so without pain. These are also things that are difficult to get worse. Now, I can't speak as much to the AC joint, but my first conversation with my doctor when I was going through this back in high school with the SC joint was, one, can it get worse? If the answer is no, perfect, move along. Two, how do we deal with the pain? And the answer at that point was to shoot it up. So I shot it up and was able to play through it, but it still had an impact on my ability to really drive the football. If Bryce Young, for whatever reason, can't drive the ball like he's used to, then you might have to look in a scenario where is a 80% Bryce Young as good as 100% Jalen Milroe? And the answer to me is no. I think Jalen Milroe is capable enough to be able to create a lot of issues in the run game. And I think he's a good enough thrower, not going to be the accurate thrower that Bryce Young is, not going to have the nuances that Bryce Young has. But I think if Bryce Young is sitting there at 70, 75%, you're not really doing the team any favors at that point. You might be better off going with the guy that's 100% that might be different with how you can attack the opposing defense, but a guy that still creates challenges for the opposing defense with his speed and explosiveness. So I think it'll be something they'll monitor closely throughout the course of the week, but I'd also be really surprised if Bryce Young is at 100% this weekend as well. My sprain took about 3 weeks, and hopefully for Bryce it won't be that long, knowing who's coming up on the schedule.
Greg, I want you to address the shooting up. As a fan, we just assume, okay, you get shot up, you're fine. But there's more to it than that. What's it like, and what do you feel, and how long does it last?
You can shoot it up, Paul. It's a great question. I think a lot of people are kind of afraid to talk about it, just because it, we all have the, the visuals of Varsity Blues in your mind where, John Voight's telling, the star quarterback, shoot it up. It's not really like that. It's more along the lines. You have a great conversation with your doctor. In my case, it was Dr. Lyle Kane, who I respect as much as anyone in the field of orthopedics. I got shot up twice in my career, once in the SC joint, once in my ribs prior to the national championship game. It deadens it a little bit, but you can still feel the pain, and you can still feel restriction. Depending on where it's at, you still feel restriction. For instance, you don't feel, it's not like you shoot it up, it's like, oh man, I'm back to normal. No, it's not really that way. You just don't feel like yourself still, but it does take away the sharpness of the pain in the event in which you get hit straight on to the injury itself. So it's not what I think a lot of people realize it to be, but it does give you a little bit of peace of mind too as a player, knowing you're doing everything you can to try to feel as normal as possible. You're not going to feel normal. It's not going to feel 100%, but it does help a little bit with some of the things that could potentially arise throughout the course of the game. You'll be deadened for about probably 4 or 5 hours or so. I don't recall exactly how long it lasts. I was always sore after the game and the spot where I got shot up, or any other spot. So I'm not sure exactly how long it lasts, but it does give you peace of mind as a player to be able to cut it loose when mentally you might not be able to do so, knowing the pain that might be created by cutting it loose without the shot.
In terms of the mental aspect, as well as the physical aspect, certainly you're going to try to avoid certain things, but you can't avoid very much. So where are you most vulnerable, with this injury and trying to overcome the pain and do your job effectively?
Well, here's the biggest problem is every single person that watched that game last week, and every single person that's paid any attention to college football knows what the injury is. And that's, hey, if I attack a guy this particular spot, he might be limited because he's going to be guarding against his right shoulder, whatever the injury may be. I mean, that's not uncommon. If a guy has, let's say, a sprained left ankle, and you know that his left ankle is sprained, you're going to influence the pass rush on one particular side to get him to push off that ankle when he might not be as springy as he would be normally. I mean, these are normal gamesmanship. Sometimes coaches hide the extent of the injury. I've called games already this year in which a coach has explained to us what the injury was, and then actually you look at the injury report and it's totally different from what the actual injury was. That happens, almost every week in our coaches' meetings. So there is a certain level of gamesmanship and where you try to hide the injury because you know that if people have knowledge of the injury, then it could be potentially used against you. As far as Bryce is concerned, I think it's difficult too because we're talking about a throwing shoulder and a throwing shoulder that's potentially worth nine figures. Maybe not nine figures in the next year, but assuming he gets to the NFL, assuming he's a first round pick, assuming he's a great player in the NFL, there's no telling what that right shoulder's worth. So he's naturally, he's going to throw caution to the wind, I would imagine, because he's a competitor. But I also think at the same time, man, you got to be really smart about, what you put your body through in this particular case. I would never, ever, ever give someone advice as to play or not to play. That's up to the individual. That's their call. But I think it's important to understand the potential consequences of injuring this shoulder further by rushing to get back in a game when you might not be needed anyways. So these are things that are important to weigh and important to value. And if I were helping mentor Bryce, these would be the discussions that I'd try to have with him to make sure he makes a thoughtful decision about not just this game, not just his team, but also his long-term future playing the position.
Great stuff from Greg McElroy, who's been there and done it and now talks about it here. Greg, many thanks. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. Much more to come. Matt Stinchcomb at the bottom of the hour, and your phone calls are next.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you with us. And let's talk to Kurt in South Carolina. Hello, Kurt.
Paul, I am honored to be on your show. I've called in many times.
Thank you.
But to make a long story short, number one, yes, I'm a Carolina fan. The Carolina, not that blue plaid accompaniment from the upper state. But in the end, I am a big Shane Beamer fan. I am a big SEC fan. I will pull for Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi State, whoever, Tennessee, against anybody that's not in the SEC. So that's my point. However, I do want to know your feelings about South Carolina and Shane Beamer. Yes, they are playing Kentucky, who they have not had a lot of luck with lately. But in the end, I'm also very interested in the Alabama A&M game. But I don't think Jimbo can beat Saban. So there, in the end, it's all about SEC football. We are the number one conference in the country. There is no doubt about that. Big Ten, all those clowns can go piss up a rope. Excuse me. But we are the number one conference in the country. And so, consequently, I will always pull for an SEC team against a non-SEC team. And especially those taters in the upper state who have a horseshoe implanted in their behind, because Wake Forest should have beat Clemson. And I think Wake Forest is a number two team maybe in the ACC, the almost competitive conference. So I'd like to hear your comments on that. And go Bama against Jimbo. Sorry, I think Jimbo's bit off more than he can chew.
So, thank you very much, Kurt. As far as Shane Beamer, I think what he's done mostly is energized the fan base, which you hope leads to recruiting victories. And I think he's gotten a few already, needs more. And yeah, I'd like to see a little more this year. You know, the Georgia game was a disappointment, but I think ultimately you know, he's got to win some of these tweener games. Kentucky, to me, is probably not one of those, but I'm talking about the Missouris and the Floridas and games like that. I thought he's let a couple opportunities get away this year, but this year was always going to be a challenge because he overachieved last year. Jeff is up next. Jeff, go right ahead. You're on the air.
What's going on, Paul?
Hey there.
Hey, did you and all your investment club buddies put out buy signals the last couple days on Wall Street?
I would have liked to. Unfortunately, I've already gone broke.
Okay. You already sold everything?
Well, no, it wasn't a matter of selling anything. I went busted. I mean, I just...
I guess you and your boy Legend have something in common now. You both went broke.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul. Hey, I thought it was a great interview you had with Greg McElroy. I think he broke it down exceptionally well, don't you?
I'm not supposed to be a fan. I'm supposed to be the interviewer. But I thought what he said about the injury was as interesting, the best thing I've heard yet on Bryce Young.
I agree. And I'm a little amazed at times how critical Alabama fans are of McElroy. I kind of refer to it. I know a lot of the Alabama fans don't like Herb Street either, but I kind of think McElroy is kind of Herbie light. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of similarities between the two, don't you?
Yes, I think Greg is among the most talented commentators around today.
Yeah. Hey, but I just thought it was a great interview, Paul. Hey, but anyway, I just listened to part of the show yesterday, Paul, and I had to call in because I came away confused yesterday when I heard some of these callers, and you seem to agree with a lot of them, that calling this Georgia comeback against a bottom-feeding Missouri team, let's keep that in mind, and I heard words like monumental, heroic, big time comeback effort. I mean, are you kidding me? If that was Ohio State or Clemson, Paul, all you and your cronies down there in the South will be saying, choke job, almost blew it, big time, another choke job. I mean, what's the difference? Where's the breakdown on this, on it, Paul? I want to hear that because I was confused.
Well, you guys struggled with a bottom feeder in your opener against Notre Dame.
Okay. And everybody wanted to say it was a choke job.
And that was at home.
Why was Georgia's comeback?
Well, Jeff, what you don't understand is that, you know, winning on the road in the SEC is considered a big deal. The previous week, hold on a second. Let me make sure I get my talking papers correct. The previous week, Jeff, hold on a second. They just brought me the notes. The previous week, Missouri nearly won a hard-fought game at Jordan-Hare Stadium, one of the most difficult places in the entire country. So you have to conversely appreciate the heroic, monumental, epic, and legendary win by the Georgia Bulldogs.
I mean, Lord, I'm about ready to get nauseous, Paul. I mean, do you guys really believe what you're saying half the time?
Of course not. But that doesn't matter. This is not about believability. It's about the brand.
It's about SEC hype. I get it, but that's what I try to keep in check, Paul. You got to give me credit. I at least try.
I mean,
to
Jeff, come on.
Few...
I mean, you have to admit we all have pretty good jobs here, and the only way to keep these jobs is to keep reading those cue cards.
Right. And I mean, I know it's going to be the standard old tell Jeff to call the Big Ten Network, all that lame, tired stuff that's not creative. I get it. But it's just hilarious, the difference in the
I think you guys have a really good conference. I mean, after all, you got a fine young man like Paul Christ who gets the wool pulled out of him. I mean, he's a native. He's a alum. And he loses to the Big Bear, Brett Bielema, and everybody panics. I would not have fired Paul Christ.
Hey, when you get that billion-dollar contract, Paul, it just means more up here now.
Yeah.
Come on.
And by the way, I don't think you guys are done. I keep hearing that you're out looking for more schools.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, what do you think about this Bama-Texas A&M game Saturday? How are you feeling that one?
I think the issue for Alabama is the battle against expectations, and that's always it's all about the number. Can they win by three? If Alabama wins by 10 points, it will feel like a disappointment, and that affects teams sometimes.
No, I agree with you. That's why I thought it was so hilarious about the monumental effort by Georgia. But I'm telling you what, Paul, whether it happens or not, I hope Alabama curb stomp Texas A&M, because I'm so tired of everybody trying to prop up Texas A&M every year when they're just the same old program, 8-4, 9-3, 7-5. I can't remember in my lifetime when they were really better than a 9-3 program, Paul.
Well, I mean, that would have been exactly
Alabama,
2 years ago, Jeff, when they came in fourth in the country.
What were they, 10-2?
Yeah. They were 10-1. They went 9-1, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. But my point is, and you got to agree, in the course of their history in the last 30 years, they're nothing more than a 9-3 program. They're basically exactly where they're at this year.
I mean, they haven't won 10 games since 2012 when Johnny Manziel won the Heisman. But that's why they hired Jimbo Fisher. That's why they gave him $100 million and they'll probably give him $100 million more because he is the best coach in America. We all know that. We're up against a break. Matt Stinchcomb is joining us next.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
A lot to discuss here with Matt Stinchcomb, the most anticipated, knowledgeable guest of the week, as we have promoted this segment right here on the cue card. Matt Stinchcomb, of course, the University of Alabama. McElroy was the previous guest.
Oh, I see. Of course.
You did the A&M game the other day. So give us, we'll get to State in a second, but what's going on with A&M's offense?
I think they are wondering the same question. They're saying, what's going on with our offense? Going into last week, there's a big gap there, right? You know, where Anaya Smith used to be, you can't just plug and play. And so even when talking to the coaches, how are you going to fill that void, significant void in your passing attack? Well, we'll have guys step up. And we talked about this in the broadcast. Some people have taken exception to this. They're a crazy young football team. It excuses nothing, but it is a reason. And we got to keep in mind, too, that there are kids out there that are playing this game, and a lot of them are freshmen, true freshmen, sophomores. And when I look along the lines of scrimmage, whether it should be this way or not is of no consequence. It is. These guys are freshmen and sophomores. And when you watch them, you're going, these guys look like freshmen and sophomores, especially along the defensive line where there's gaps that aren't filled. And when they are filled, on like a run fit, for example, they just get bounced, and where a veteran player would be able to anchor down or at the very least tie up the lineman, they just roll up, and you're worried about knees getting blown out. They're playing like they're as young as they are. All that to say, on the offensive side of the ball, they don't protect very well. They have not run the football with any consistency. There have been flashes, and Devon Achain remains one of the greatest threats offensively in this conference. It's just a matter of diversifying the offense enough to where you don't know he's getting the ball all the time. And in the first half versus Mississippi State, it wasn't like you could just predictively think that, but you could absolutely anticipate it, and it would make sense. Try to get the ball to number six, because the other guys haven't emerged enough to where else would you want to go with the football? And now they've got an issue at quarterback. Max Johnson left that game. It's a mess in that I don't know what mainstays you have offensively that you could actually start saying, okay, you did this well for this many weeks. Let's build out from there. Well, you had Haynes King, and then you had Max Johnson, and now you're back to Haynes King, and you had Anaya Smith, and now you don't. And now basically the eye of the storm is Devon Achain. And, you know, maybe you start snapping it directly to him. I don't know, because at this point, I don't know what they're going
to
do.
So you head to Alabama. We'll get to their offensive issues in a moment, but you know the Alabama defense. You've seen them.
Yes.
What happens on that side of the ball?
A&M is going to have to work hard and maybe even pray that they are highly successful on first and second down. What they demonstrated versus Mississippi State was that they don't hold up in protection. The few times that they did, they actually did operate relatively well, especially in the passing game. Max Johnson actually delivered some footballs downfield when he had time. But then you think about the proposition that they will be faced with in the Alabama defensive front, and what I would think to be one of the most imposing from a personnel standpoint and scheme, frankly, in college football. You're hard-pressed to find a better one. And I'm talking about with just their down lineman players. When we're talking, you've got Dallas Turner, Braswell, and Will Anderson Jr. out there. I had to pause. I couldn't think of the kid's name. God, what is that guy's name? You have them out there on the field at the exact same time. This A&M front has had a hard time deciphering their own protection, much less winning the one-on-one battles. It's not a winning formula. Now, you'll have a mobile quarterback in Haynes King, so that might help you some. But this is a formidable scenario that they're facing offensively from the Aggie perspective.
We're getting a mixed bag of opinions on Georgia. The consensus, though, some people are a little concerned, but the consensus is don't worry about them. I want to know what your thoughts are.
I would say that two performances in a row, that's cause for concern. You know, there's times when you're going, that's anomalous. It's a non-conference vote. We did the Kent State game. We're watching it. We're going, you know what? There was probably three touchdowns on that field that they dropped, literally dropped. It probably changes things. You don't fit a wide receiver screen well, et cetera. But then you face Missouri on the road, and you literally play to the extent where the crowd actually gets into it versus taking them out of it. And the run blocking, which I'm very slow to judge in that regard, because I know for a fact you can run the football well statistically and block poorly up front. It can happen. You pop a couple of long runs, a quarterback scrambles, whatever. Somebody looks at the box score and said, oh, my gosh, you rushed for 220 yards. Yeah, our quarterback was running for his life because we didn't protect well, and we popped a couple of nice long runs. And next thing you know, the offensive line played well. The inverse is also true. You can run the ball poorly statistically and block your tail off up front. I watched this game, and they were sloppy. This was a sloppy performance up front. And by that, I mean you could not point out a single performer or performance where you're saying, okay, this guy probably graded out with a winning grade. Each guy kind of took their turn, but they took their turn multiple times. And they did it in ways where – so the good part and the bad part is for Georgia, at least offensively in the run game and all the concerns around that, is – they would do it right on some snaps. So that's encouraging, because now I know you can do it. What's concerning is then you would do it poorly on other snaps. And the question is, what changed? What changed? Do it just like you did this time, and we'll be better. We might not be perfect. It rarely is. But for sure, don't do it this way. Don't be leaning over your toes. Don't put your hat on the wrong side when you're trying to reach a player, and the guy just slips off and makes the play. I mean – there's nothing new under the sun, right? The blocking techniques are very similar to what they ever were before. And you clearly know them because you just did it four or five plays ago. So just do it again. And what they had the other night was an uncoordinated effort to somehow diffuse whatever momentum they could establish offensively. Stetson Bennett didn't play well the other day. Not only were his passes inaccurate, but also you could look and see, and you're going, you're missing some reads. Part of that was because he was getting his head knocked off. So, you know, the game plan, it looks like to me, Paul, was Missouri said, you know what, we'll just be aggressive. We're going to come after you, especially in the obvious passing downs. They got in the red zone, and they're playing cover zero a couple of times, and it's like, we'll take our chances. And it worked out. We'll get to you before you can make the right decision. They got a guy, Kyrus Jackson, standing wide open right over the football for a touchdown, but Stetson Bennett's been popped so many times, and he's got pressure from both edges that he ends up throwing the ball to, I think it was Dylan Bell, and got a PI. But it's a touchdown if you go somewhere else. But by then, he'd been popped so many times. I'll be surprised if Auburn doesn't employ a similar tact just to see. You know, why die slowly if I can give myself a chance to win or die quickly, right? I mean, and if that's the case, if you go cover zero and I come after these guys and, you know, I'll take my chances, then at least I'm taking my chances. I'm giving myself a chance. And maybe you get me. But if I just sit back and let you extend plays and eventually these receivers will uncover and now I'm exposing myself to a big play, I'll be surprised if Auburn doesn't have a very similar aggressive defensive tact.
A quick thought on one other game. Tennessee goes to LSU. Tennessee, there's no mystery that Tennessee is very explosive. Some are starting to say, now hold on a second. Florida, average. Pittsburgh, Georgia Tech.
So yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we'll have to worry about that after this weekend. This isn't a great LSU team, but it's still – they're good.
It can be – it's a threatening LSU team, and I will say this is – it's a hostile environment. Now, you went on the road and you beat Pitt on the road. Playing Pitt on the road is not the same as playing LSU on the road, and LSU getting that win versus Auburn puts more teeth in the effect of playing at LSU, right? If they drop that game versus Auburn, you know, you've already got the loss to FSU. There's, you know, some grumbling, to say the least. Maybe that environment isn't as imposing as it typically is. I think they'll be wound up for this one, especially knowing that Tennessee, highly ranked, a lot of high hopes, et cetera. And they haven't been there since, what was it, 2016? How long has it been? 2010 or something?
I think it was, I know that 2010 was the famous game that they had won.
I think it's 2010.
That really ruined Derek Dooley's career.
Yes. Though. Yeah, 13 men on the field or something like that. So
yeah, the game won.
Yeah, it was over. It was the craziest. It was the craziest confluence
really
of events. And then he later lost the opposite way with the exact same rule being imposed, 2 men on the field in the bowl game. But I think that they'll be very excited. So that'll be an interesting test for Tennessee because, as you pointed out, they're undefeated. They've looked impressive. They narrowly beat a Pittsburgh team that we all have to question now. How good are they? Really outside of Ohio State right now, which I don't know how good Ohio State is, but they've looked impressive at least. College football is flatter than it seemed in the past, meaning there aren't as – it doesn't seem like at this juncture there's as much separation as maybe we've had in other years where there are these teams that are seemingly dominant. And maybe it was just, you know, Georgia sprints out of the gates – and now maybe what we're seeing is the team that probably has always existed, but the scoreboard maybe masked some things. You know, Alabama with the issue with Bryce Young, the near miss at Texas. You know, so to me, it's almost like it makes college football a lot more interesting because it's not as many foregone conclusions, I think, going into Saturdays.
Well, pundits would just quit making these overreaching statements. We'd be a lot better off.
and then putting numbers next to the teams. We haven't seen anybody play, but I think this is the sixth best team
Absolutely.
In the country.
Well, that was Texas A&M, and I still think they're the sixth best team in the SEC West.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was about to say, where are we headed with this? You better slap a qualifier on there.
I'm a professional.
Yeah.
Great to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having
Thank
me.
Thank you very much. Matt Stinchcomb joining us. You'll see plenty of him later on. And right now, we are going to take a break.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome all of you back. Let's continue the calls. And Augie, the paralegal, is up next.
Yeah, expert in paralegal studies, Paul. I've got an advanced degree. So if you need any research help, give me a call. But I hear you, you're taking inside information on the next Auburn coach. Is that true?
If you've got it, we'll take it.
I've got it. So I know somebody who has a friend who works inside the Auburn Athletic Department, and here are the top names they have. Of course, Hugh Freeze is the top. But right below that, they've got Bobby Petrino. They've got Mike Archer. Remember him?
Of course.
Remember Mike Archer? And then they got Bill Snyder. And Bill Snyder is still around, so Bill Snyder is on the list. So what do you think about those three?
I think those are did you leave out Barry Switzer?
Don't have Barry Switzer, but they're also talking about Sonny Dykes, potentially. So those are the new names in addition. Hugh Freeze is still the leaderboard. Money's on Hugh Freeze. And here's a name, Paul, that everybody was talking about, but it seems like nobody's talking about it now. What, Matt Campbell, the guy at Iowa State, is that his name?
I mean, every year somebody picks, including this year, somebody picks Matt Campbell to get to the CFP, and every year they choke away an early game. I don't know. I think he's a good football coach, but is he going to turn your program around? Is he that dynamic?
I didn't think he should be in the mix to begin with, but, you know, hey, I'm not an expert. I just listen to the experts. And something else you mentioned last week that was right on target, the big matchup between Clemson and North Carolina State. You said it. When did North Carolina State ever perform to their highest expectations? I can't ever think of a time when they ever did. Can you?
It is one of those quintessential hard luck schools that always comes close. And I mean, like last year, they had a really good team last year. They had a top five draft choice. And, you know, they beat Clemson in double overtime, and they throw away a game or two after that.
To me, they're your quintessential choker. They always get into the conversation only to choke. And speaking of the conversation, Paul, your show has been lean on Kentucky fans calling in and talking about their chances.
Yeah, I haven't. Have I missed the first one in 2 days?
You have not. I don't think you've had anybody. Another one you're short on. Don't forget us, Arkansas. They seem to have dropped off the face of the earth.
They have been quiet, but the Arkansas fans will be back after the next couple of weeks. I mean, they have Mississippi State this week and BYU. I fully expect to hear from them again.
Okay, well, what about A&M? You don't have your A&M guys calling?
No, we do have a few A&M callers, and I think so far they've been very, very realistic.
Well, that's the thing. They're not boisterous like they were before. And then Florida seems to be pretty quiet, too. I don't hear much out of Florida.
But do you know why the A&M fans are quiet right now?
Well, because they know what's coming Saturday.
Well, because privately they are questioning Jimbo Fisher, but they don't want to say that publicly. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, being in church when you act a certain way, and then when you get to the cafeteria afterwards, you start talking.
Do you really think Woodward was really strongly after Dumbo, or was that?
Yeah, yes, I do.
I
firmly believe that.
So, knowing what you know about Fisher, what does that impact your impression of Woodward's judgment?
Well, the only thing I know about Woodward is this: he hired Kelly, who I think is a very good selection, and I think he will be better than Jimbo Fisher in the end. So sometimes and I don't know that Scott Woodward would have ultimately pulled the trigger on Jimbo Fisher. I think he certainly thought about it very seriously. And, you know, we'll see in terms of the rest of his hires. But the football coach is the only one that I think we are going to have many conversations with.
Well, don't forget now, he hired Mulkey back to be the women's basketball coach, and she's done a great job.
Kim Mulkey did a great job, and she also had maybe one of the most ridiculous responses I've ever heard last week about Brittany Griner.
I didn't hear that. But he also hired Jay Johnson, who's got the number one recruiting class in baseball this year. But I got a question for you, Paul. Last week you were in Oxford. I don't know where you're going to be this week. But Squirrel obviously had a good time in his trip. He posted a lot of pictures.
I haven't heard from Squirrel. I met Tony. We had such a great time. He hung out with us for about an hour, hour and a half. I introduced him to Tebow and Laura and all the other celebrities, it was really fun to spend some time with him. We are back. Another hour to go. Stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.